One of Roy McGregor's many achievements is the impersonation of Wayne Gretzky. Not on the ice, mind you. Nobody could do that. Roy McGregor, whom the Washington Post has called the closest thing there is to a poet laureate of Canadian hockey, helped Mr. Gretzky tap out his newspaper columns. Hence the title of Roy McGregor's collected hockey writings, Wayne Gretzky's Ghost. Roy McGregor joins me now from the CBC in Ottawa, where the NHL's All-Star Game will happen tomorrow. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you so much, Bill.
How did Wayne Gretzky, the great one himself, come to the newspaper trade?
I don't know all the inner workings of it. I was working for the National Post at the time, and they approached him or his agent, Mike Barnett, and put forward this idea of him doing a column about hockey. There's always been a rumor around there was great amounts of money involved. Nonetheless, they thought it was a good idea, but they would need someone to so-called ghost write the column for Wayne. We had known each other for many years, and I was surprised. As I was already at the Post, they asked me if I would drop one of my columns and once a week do the column for Wayne. And this is the time of fax machines, which you may remember what they were, Bill. Yeah, I would write the column, fax it to the agent, fax it to Wayne, and they would mark it up or change things and that, fax it back. And it was taking up too much time. It only took 2 weeks to whittle down to a single little 1 or 2 minute phone call with Wayne. I'd write up the column, send it in. He wouldn't even see it.
So did you enjoy being Wayne Gretzky's ghost?
Well, I like Wayne. Get along well with him. Had to prod him a few times to try to be controversial. One of the things about Wayne is that he's extremely diplomatic. One of the things about doing an effective column, of course, is that sometimes you want to use it as a bully pulpit or mischief maker. And so he was a little reluctant that way. But when I look back on them, that was now 10 years or 12 years ago. And it's interesting. He called for visors, for example. And one of the players that he pointed out should be wearing a visor was a Ranger teammate called Manny Malhotra, who was quite young then, had taken off his visor. In his column, Wayne advised him to put it back on or he'd regret it. He didn't put it back on, and last spring, you may recall, Manny almost lost his eye.
Hmm. Gretzky's Ghost includes a celebration of the backyard hockey rink upon which Wayne Gretzky skated as a child. Am I reading that story incorrectly if I see in it a warning about global warming?
Oh, no, you're reading it absolutely correctly. And Walter Gretzky, Wayne's father, when I was there, visited him. He kind of choked up standing out there. Instead of the old backyard rink, which he loved to put together every winter, there's a swimming pool in there that his children had insisted he put in so that he'd have some place to exercise in that. He actually didn't like the swimming pool. He didn't like the fact that he no longer could work on his rink. But as he said, the fact of the matter is, we used to have a rink that ran about 3.5 months every winter. If I did a rink now, I'd be lucky to get 2 weeks out of it.
Until I read your book, I was not familiar with Gilles Gratton, and perhaps some of our listeners won't know of his exploits either. He was a player who told you, "My ambition is to never work." How'd that work out for him?
Well, he ended up a photographer in Europe, so I guess he won. Now I'll have every photographer hating me for that. He was a character. This is in the days of the World Hockey Association. He was a goaltender for the Toronto Toros, a professional goaltender. And unbeknownst to the Toros, and they would have fired him for this, he was coming out and playing shinny hockey with my group, but he was playing out at the same time he's playing goal professionally. He did tarot cards, for example, and he did his own charts. He also maintained, claimed to me, that he absolutely believed that he had been a Spanish soldier during the Inquisition and had died from a spear thrust to the heart. And he had a mark on his chest where he was convinced that the spear had gone in. He once, very famously, when his teammates had already gone out to practice, he came out wearing nothing but his goal mask and his skates and streaked around the arena. That's a very famous incident. And there are many with Gilles. Gilly Gratuni, they called him.
It never occurred to him that that mark on his chest might have been an errant hockey puck. It had to be a spear in a former life.
Well, he was extremely weird, let me assure you. But what a charming, funny guy. And he had the wonderful attitude that this is not important. That I am playing a child's game. Somebody's foolish enough to give me a lot of money to do something I just enjoy doing anyway, and I'm going to take that money. But I'm not going to take the game very seriously.
In 2010, you wrote an article titled A Scandal of Minuscule Proportions, which is a wonderful title. Tell us a little bit about what inspired that story.
Well, I have had my issues with my own profession, journalism, and sports journalism in particular. And this was, to me, one of the more outrageous moments of my experience. I happened to be sitting in the stands working late on a story after the Canadian women had won the gold medal over the American women. And as the Zamboni was going around the rink cleaning it off for the very last time, they came out, and some of them posed with the Zamboni, and then more came out. Another of the young hockey players brought out some beer and passed it around, and one of the women hockey players had a couple of cigars, and they got them lighted and going. Now, to me, this was exactly what the males would do had they won the gold medal. But no, a journalist decided this was something that better be reported, so he writes up this story about this scandalous behavior, finds out that one of the girls who had grabbed one of the beer was 18 years of age. She was not only 18 years of age, but the game had taken place in British Columbia. Aha, where the drinking age is 19. Therefore, she was illegally drinking, wrote this up as some kind of a terrible thing, and there should be punishment. Hockey Canada comes out and apologizes. I couldn't believe the stupidity of these people. They come out and apologize for the behavior of the women. So I wrote an article absolutely ripping all of them from the journalist of Hockey Canada saying, let them celebrate. They just won the Olympic gold medal.
That story and your celebration of Angela Ruggiero made it sound as if you're a real fan of the women's game.
Oh, yes. I think we have a real problem with it in that the other teams aren't competitive. Once in a while, Sweden will tie or even win a game. And once in a while, Finland puts up a pretty good show. But it has to improve more quickly than it has. If you go back to men's hockey in the Olympics back in the 1920s when it first began, you'll see stories there of Canada, for example, beating Denmark 61-0. And just outrageous scores, so that it took many years for the men to have some kind of parity in terms of international world hockey. It's going to take that for women, too. It won't be that way forever. They're getting better all the time, and I have a lot of faith that it will be good.
Recently, there's been a lot of discussion about head injuries in pro hockey and pro football, of course, as well. Regarding the hockey injuries, you've written, it's not a man's game at all, it's a child's game, and it is what has become dysfunctional. Elaborate a little bit on that theme.
Well, I even found a better line later on when I was writing about it. I say, if hockey's such a man's game, how come all the games are brought to you by Viagra? And it just irritates me so much that within the hockey culture, which is, I've never been able to find an appropriate word for this, Bill, but I'm going to use a word that is not quite right, but it's close. It's homophobic. And in the hockey world, any perceived sign of weakness, just like in a chicken coop, leads to the pecking to death of that person who has been shown that sign of weakness. So you end up with a situation where those players who despise fighting and despise the violence are reluctant to speak out against it. You reach a situation where journalists who write about it, as I do, I want to see fighting completely ended in hockey. I want to see a real penalties for fighting, and I absolutely want to see a complete end to headshots in hockey. Well, in response, I get ridiculed and sneered at less and less. I think that it's going to change, and I think people have to have the courage to stand up and say, this is foolish, this is injuring our children, we have got to stop it. Just as 50 years ago people started talking that way about smoking, because we didn't know back then, and we didn't know right until now just how serious these head injuries are.
In an article you wrote about a year and a half ago, you maintained that in Canada, although soccer might claim more numbers, hockey leads, as it always has, in nightly dreams and daily conversations. I smile when I read that line. Describe the sport's hold on the population of Canada.
It's an all-consuming sport in this country, particularly at the conversational level. I spent the last day in office with Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. His final day of office, I was allowed to spend the whole day with him. Driving up to Parliament Hill in his car, he turns around to me and he says, in his accent, you know, I was like the Rocket, meaning Rocket Richard. I may not have been the best player on the ice, but I had a good eye for the net. Well, metaphors like that are completely understandable to Canadians. Even in politics, we will say, if somebody's up yakking away in Parliament, but they're not getting anywhere, we'll say they're just ragging the puck, or they're stick handling, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or people go out on thin ice, we say. So that all of our language is based on hockey, and hockey is very much the way we like to think of ourselves as the world sees us. We win, we're team-like, and in the end, we're humble. So myth or not, that's the way Canadians love to see themselves.
Roy McGregor is the author of Wayne Gretzky's Ghost and Other Tales from a Lifetime in Hockey. It's published by Random House Canada. He joined me from the CBC in Ottawa. Roy, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I enjoyed it immensely.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. We had help this week from CBC Ottawa, and our intern is Jeremy Conlon. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our soccer foot painting photo gallery or learn more about this week's music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from Wayne Gretzky's ghost author, Roy McGregor, who makes a very strange boast.
I actually tell people that I've written more books than I've read.
I'm not sure I'd want to tell anybody that. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.